From the land of Grand Hudibras City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of January 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with the folks at the Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana, that belongs to the Anderson. A bit later in the program, Jeremy Ross will be here again from the University of Arkansas, where he serves as an extension soybean agronomist. We're going to talk about production management and some of the things that they've been doing in the Mid-South that have brought their soybean yields out of the 20s in the last decade all the way up to, well, 70s or better. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up more soybean production areas, even further south, more discussion about Argentina. It's still dry there. We thought there might be some rainfall, but not yet. We'll hear more from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. From Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Our regular Wednesday afternoon analyst, Jackie Vakes, is not available today as she's taking care of her husband. She wanted me to let you know that Jeff had fallen and broken his leg. Well, that happened about a week ago. But that he's doing better, although he's in surgery today to have a plate and some screws put in. So he broke it pretty badly. She'll be looking forward to being back with us again next week. We'll hear more about the marketplace a bit later in our program, but let's start today in a different space. We'll pick up a conversation we started yesterday with Jeremy Ross. He's an extension agronomist for soybeans from the University of Arkansas. Yesterday we talked with him about dicamba. Today we're going to take up a discussion as it relates to production management in Arkansas, the Mid-South in general, and how that works into some of the things you've heard from Scott Irwin, agricultural economist at the U of I, about soybean yields in the United States. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, soybeans since the 1970s have gained about a half a bushel an acre, a bit less than that, just from genetic improvement. However, the last 4 years have been much better than that half bushel to the acre gain. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from here on campus, wondered if there was some new vigor in the soybean gene pool. He dug into the numbers and decided that wasn't the case, that most of the gains over the last 4 years have been weather-related, and looking forward, he doesn't see that trend continuing. However, he does see some management and production improvements that have come specifically out of the Southeast, and I wondered about those and what this has meant for places like Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Arkansas. And so I called and talked with Jeremy Ross. He's a soybean agronomist for the University of Arkansas Extension System. I started our conversation by asking him whether he thought Irwin's hypothesis about the improvements in the Southeast yields, bean production related, were correct.
No, I agree with that statement because, you know, even years ago, you know, soybeans in the Mid-South was, you know, kind of treated like a stepchild, and they were planted after everything else was planted, and really wasn't that much management, you know, especially when Roundup came out in the 90s. You know, a lot of farmers planted their soybeans, sprayed them with Roundup maybe once, twice if weeds got away, and really kind of just walked away from them, really didn't do really manage them like, you know, like some of the other crops we have in the Mid-South, the cotton and the rice and corn, you know, in the last several years. So I think, you know, there's been big gains and then a lot more, you know, interest in managing soybeans just because of, you know, prices that had, you know, a few years ago. But you know, I think overall, I think management in the Mid-South has improved, especially probably in the last 10 to 15 years.
What are the primary production management changes that have been made?
Well, number one, I think irrigation. And so, you know, in Arkansas, 85% of our soybean acres are irrigated in some form, be it, you know, fur irrigated, you know, planted on beds. We have some that are flood irrigated. And that's mainly in our rice cropping areas. They'll pull, you know, these levees throughout the field and flood irrigate beans. And then we have some overhead irrigation pivots and, you know, a few laterals are scattered across the state. But, you know, if we didn't have that supplemental irrigation, there's no way we could produce the yields that we are and kind of be competitive with the Mid-South or the Midwest just because, you know, that supplemental irrigation. And so irrigation efficiency, you know, using different tools to know when to start irrigating, when to terminate irrigation, how often to irrigate. We've made some pretty good strides in the last 10 to 15 years with that. Other things is just normal production, you know, seeding rates and row spacing and pesticide control. We've got, you know, pretty good emphasis on late season insect and disease treatments and thresholds. We have a majority of our acreage is probably scouted with you know, consultants, be it, you know, consultants that work for a co-op or private individual, you know, consultants. And so, you know, we're pretty aggressive on, you know, making sure, you know, we're maintaining as clean a crop as we can get. But, you know, I think we're just better managers of our soybean crops today than we were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. I think that's a big impact on why we're seeing such a increase in yield. And so if you look at the trend, you know, if you go all the way back to the 20s, and you graph out, you know, average yields across each year, I think it's somewhere around less than half a bushel gain per year, half a bushel per acre per year gain. But if you just look at the last 10 to 15 years, you know, we're close to almost a one bushel per acre per year gain. And a lot of that, you know, is some is with the genetics that we have, you know, the last 10 to 15 years. But also a big part of that is just we're better managers of our soybean crop in the Mid-South than we were 10, 15 years ago.
I'm interested in your late season management. What insects do you deal with?
Well, a whole host of different things. So insect-wise, corn earworm has been a big one the last several years. And then all the Lepidoptera, you know, species, the, you know, all the caterpillars is a big one. The past couple of years, stink bugs, you know, the browns and the green, southern green stink bugs have been some issues. But this year, our biggest impact in insect was the red-banded stink bug. And so it had migrated up, you know, from the Gulf Coast. And we've had some fairly mild winters the last two winters. And so that particular pest is a tropical pest, and so with the mild winters we had the last couple of years, that particular insect kind of overwintered and was able to kind of get a better start, a more early start this past year. With the temperatures we're having now, I'm hoping, you know, that it will knock it back some. You know, they're predicting we'll be below freezing, you know, for more than 90 hours, you know, the last couple of days. And so that should impact the survivability of that particular pest. But, you know, mainly that's the main thing. That, you know, stink bugs and the Lepidoptera species are the two main insect problems we deal with any given year.
Fungicide applications are important.
They are. You know, we're a little more humid and a little bit more warm than the Midwest. So frog eye leaf spot is a big one that we deal with. We also have a large percentage of that particular disease is resistant to the strobilurin fungicide. So Headline, Quadris, we're not able to use those individual compounds to control that particular disease anymore. We're having to go with, multiple modes of action or, you know, different formulations to control that different disease. Cercospora leaf blot comes in late. We deal with it on a yearly basis. And then depending on, you know, what kind of rotation we're in, sometimes we have some rhizoc issues, aerial web blight and some things like that. And then we have a host of, you know, some what we consider minor diseases Septori and SDS is kind of hit and miss depending on, what year it is. So, we kind of have several different insects and diseases we have to deal with on a yearly basis, but, really depending on how the environment is, that could change, from a year-to-year basis as well.
Just as a reminder, we're talking with Jeremy Ross. He's a soybean agronomist for the University of Arkansas Extension System. We've been discussing some of the work that agricultural economist from the U of I, Scott Irwin, has done as it's related to soybean yield trend. He's pointed to weather as the primary upward trend factor over the last several years, but also that there is an impact nationally on the average yield as it's related to the Southeast and some of the production and management factors that have been in play there. Let's continue with fungicides, Jeremy, and I'd like to ask you about the impact of Asian soybean rust. This is the disease that the Brazilians deal with.
It's not. So I actually, when I started this position back in 2007, the couple of years prior to me taking this position is when we really had the soybean rust, I guess, kind of scare. And so, we had a big emphasis on putting out sentinel pots and monitoring, to see if we could, detect that particular disease. And it just never did manifest into the epidemic, that the South America has seen with that particular disease. We've had a couple of years where, we've had a tropical depression or something kind of blow spores in late in the season from the Gulf Coast, but we've never seen much of an impact at all, with that particular disease.
Tell me a bit about production management practices related to row width spacing and ridge till.
It's all over the board. I struggle doing row spacing work because we have producers all the way from 7.5-inch centers on drills all the way out to the 38-inch centers on mainly our cotton production area. And so the row spacing really depends on what other commodities individual farmers grow. And so in the historical cotton areas, they're still on wide rows, and that's just what they have their equipment set up on, to continue with the cotton on the wide rows. The corn guys are still using, 30 to 36-inch row spacing, and a lot of them have switched to a twin-row system. So they're putting two rows that are spaced about, anywhere from 7 to 10 inches apart on top of a bed. But they're still on those, 36 to 38-inch beds.
And that bed is primarily for what crop? Is it mainly a cotton thing, or is it for corn?
Mainly cotton and corn. And so, like I said, majority of our acreage is irrigated. And so to facilitate irrigation, a lot of farmers do pull beds and then plant on top of those beds and then use those furrows for irrigating, during the season.
And they use corn in 7-inch rows on those beds as well?
No. Corn is in 30 to 36-inch or 38. Yeah. We had some guys kind of dabble in some narrow row corn, and it was a disaster. So there's not very many that, everybody's still kind of staying on the 30 to 36, 38-inch bed on corn. But, then you move into the rice areas, and, those rice is planted on, drilled. And so in the rice areas, the farmer's typically going to drill, his soybeans. And so, unlike the Midwest, I've got a whole gamut of different row configurations that I have to deal with. And so you got single 38, single 36s, and then you got the guys that go to the twin row system with two rows on top of the bed. Some guys are going to wider beds, 60-inch bed. And so that's typical what you might consider a skip row, if you're irrigating, you're irrigating kind of every other row with those 60-inch beds. And so there's a lot of issues, but we've got a lot of data. And I was in collaborated with some of my colleagues up north, and we did a national study looking at row spacing, and anything less than 30 inches is going to gain you yield. And so I've had a lot of play with that data, and there's been some producers that have gone to narrow rows to try to, capture some of that yield that they've been losing on some of these wider beds. But again, it's really kind of what your other commodities are and how you're set up with your equipment to produce that commodity, and that really dictates, what kind of row spacing you're going to have on your soybeans.
Hey, Jeremy, thanks so much.
Okay, no problem, anytime.
That's Jeremy Ross. He is a soybean agronomist for the University of Arkansas Extension System. Joins us today to discuss some work that U of I agricultural economist Scott Irwin has been talking about this year. You can find that work on the FarmDoc Daily site as it relates to soybean yields and the potential that the yield curve has shifted upward over the past 4 years. That clearly is the case. However, he suspects most of that increase is due to really good weather, which he would not expect to continue in the future. A bit of it comes from the southeast, where production management has gotten much better. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, let's check in now on the cash grain situation. Pete Peterson is here. He's from the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, where they make ethanol. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Thanks for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
I take it it's cold and snowy there.
It is both. Very cold and snowing's let up a little bit now, but still a nuisance.
Once the new year came in, and this week and next, do you get a whole bunch of corn that comes in for the ethanol plant, or does it dribble in just over a little bit at a time because you're consuming it constantly?
It seems like it is not as big of a flush as it used to be in days of yesteryear. It seems like deliveries are spread out a little bit more than they once were, but we still get a fair share in the first of the year for tax purposes and other things. But cold weather right now seems to be a little bit of a hindrance.
And, of course, is it part of that because so many bins have been built as well?
Definitely. I think that gives guys a little bit more staying power, I guess, and then obviously cash flow and grain movement in general. You just got to be hauling grain 365 days a year anymore, it seems like.
What were the primary drivers in today's futures market in Chicago?
Not a lot of action today in general. A little back and forth trade out there. Still some unsureness as far as the South American situation. It just seems like no matter what rains they get, it seems like they're just a little bit unsettled just how stable the crop is out there. Beans are still a driving force right now at this point.
In the local area, what does basis look like for both corn and soybeans?
Basis on corn and beans both are improving slightly here in the nearby from the simple fact of just, the majority of grain moving on diesel vehicles, this cold weather is kind of tough to get up and down the roads and been a little bit slow going. So I think basis is going to try to stimulate some movement.
And the ethanol plant is operating at a positive at this time?
Yes, we are. Not jumping up and down about it, but we are still a positive and just one of those where, it's just day by day and go from there.
We did set some records late in the year last year, or 2017. Expectations for that to continue, or will we begin to lower down the amount of ethanol that's coming out of the United States?
I think it'll continue to be very good as long as the export market doesn't start to heat up. But right now, the economics of U.S. Ethanol and everything is setting up real well.
All right. And your bids for the day?
Let's see here. Right now, cash corn at Climbers, we're at 5 under at 348. At Delphi, we're 10 under at 343. Soybeans at Delphi were 32 under the March at 937.
That's Pete Peterson. He is with the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. That's the closing market report for Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated. Thanks for being with us during this first week of 2018. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Hey, so let's start with Argentina today. We haven't checked in for a couple of weeks. They were dry. They were supposed to get some rainfall. I don't know whether they did or did not.
They actually have only received some rain over the last week. Cordoba is the one province that has done relatively well, but the rest of the country has dried down additionally. And most of the far north, with the exception of a few areas in the northwest, are critically dry. We've pretty much depleted top in subsoil moisture from northern Argentina. So the crops up there are certainly in very serious shape. We are also drying down Buenos Aires in a rather significant manner. And Buenos Aires, of course, is a much more important grain and oilseed producing province. And having it dry out in a significant manner is a real threat to the country. Now, some showers will occur in Buenos Aires tomorrow, and they will shift northward through the rest of the country as we go from Friday into Saturday morning. Now, this precipitation event is not all that impressive, though. We'll see a tenth to maybe six-tenths of an inch of rain. There may be some localized amounts that get up close to an inch, but it certainly isn't going to be the soaker that the nation needs. And then we go under the influence of a high-pressure ridge for the end of the weekend and most of next week, which is going to continue to allow for more drying to occur, at the same time raising temperatures well above average. So Argentina is in a position right now where some pretty significant stress is going to evolve over this next seven-day period. And it's probably not going to be until somewhere close to mid-month that we'll have an opportunity for more rain.
How about a bit further north into Brazil? They've had actually a pretty good growing season, other than they were supposed to have started a little late, though. I think they caught up as planting continued there.
Yeah, I think so. And really, the crop conditions, as you stated, have been really very, very good up till now. Southern Brazil is expected to dry down over the same 7 to 10-day period that we just talked about for Argentina. So there's a good chance that Rio Grande do Sul into parts of southern Paraguay and Uruguay will likely dry out quite a bit, and the need for rain will be rising over this period of time. Now, subsoil moisture is still favorable in these areas, so there's no critical situation right now, but it's very, very important that we do experience some additional rainfall in a timely manner starting at mid-month and continuing on into the end of the month. So right now we feel pretty good about the situation, but it does bear a close watch.
In the United States, we probably should check on the Northeast. They're expecting a pretty good-sized storm.
Indeed, our first nor'easter of the year. It's pretty impressive coming together on the forecast charts, but it's not as big a storm as we've had in the past. We're probably looking at anywhere from 4 to 10 inches of snow accumulating across parts of the region, and this will take place as we go through the night tonight and all the way into Friday. The significant snow will likely cause some travel issues, especially from Long Island up through New England. I think New York City may not be impacted quite so severely, but they will have some light snow. And then further southward towards the Washington, D.C. area, just a real brief shot of snow that shouldn't be a big issue.
And finally, the Plains States, check in on livestock and wheat for me.
Yeah, you know, earlier this week we got cold enough in hard red winter wheat country to cause some damage across parts of Kansas, southeastern Colorado, northern parts of the Texas Panhandle, and northern Oklahoma. Extreme lows at Garden City and Dodge City, Kansas, slipped to -9 degrees on Monday morning, and we're in the single digits on Tuesday morning. So we do think there's some damage out there. There was no snow on the ground in much of that region. From a livestock perspective, the biggest issue remains that it's pretty dry out there and the grasses are not very good. But the cold has abated and or is in the process of doing so. We'll see much milder conditions now all the way through next week.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.